Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us on this first show of 2014, and I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Because this is the winter break at the university at which the studio of Empower Radio is located, we can't do a live show, but we are going to do a rebroadcast of an interview with me that was done by Dave Schrader on Darkness Radio. This is part two of the interview that started last week. But first, tonight's metaphysical music. And, you know, the thing about New Year's is that everybody makes resolutions which are notorious for not being carried out. Gyms all over the world will be full of people who have resolved to get in shape, and that'll last a few weeks, and then it'll go back to the people who really seriously want to keep exercising. So why is that? There's a big difference between New Year's resolutions and setting an intention that you really are going to carry out. I look at it this way. When you get really clear about what you want to attract or create in your experience, the tendency is to quantify it, to set a goal. And that's not necessarily bad, but resolutions and goals are not really intentions. And there are hidden, quirky things most people never hear about that affect what you get when you ask for a change in your life. The concept of the law of attraction and how to manifest what you desire has been around for thousands of years. But there are arcane rules of setting intention that are the key to understanding how to do that. And most people really have no idea what specific outcome will give you what you want. So you think you know what you want, and that's what you say your goal or your intention is, but what's really going to give you what you want? So there is a long-standing piece of spiritual advice that says always include a disclaimer in what you ask for. This is something that sounds like this or something better manifests in a perfect way for the highest good of all, or something similar, because it's the intention that matters, not the exact words. So you head off in the direction that you're being attracted to, but you have to realize that there will be detours and you may wind up somewhere you didn't expect to go. It's often said that if you don't get what you get is a lesson, and I don't think that's completely accurate. What you really get is the opportunity to recalibrate your desire, to figure out what you really want, and whether you really want it. Is it worth what it will take if it's not easy to get it? But the other thing you get, if you have a subconscious resistance or fear about what you're asking for, the universe will benevolently gift you an opportunity to heal whatever that is. Because until you heal that, you won't get what you desire. And that usually looks like emotional chaos and your life going to hell in a handbasket, which is something that most people are not willing to do, and it's the tough spiritual work that really needs to be done if you're going to be on the path and clearing out what's in your way. So, you know, people usually say, oh, I don't want to work that hard. I think I'll have a beer or a cookie or a piece of chocolate or do whatever you do to distract yourself when things get hard and confusing. So here's the deal. You ask for your best estimate of what you believe you really want and you set out to get it. But you have to be open to spirit, knowing better than you do. So I want to tell you a story. In last week's interview, you heard the story of how I apprenticed with two shamans in California. And I got out there because my father was dying. And during the last few hours of his life, the Cherokee medicine man that I had met, the Kiowa, came, and it was amazing. He came, took two buses and walked across town to come to this apartment of young white guy that he had just met. It was amazing. And he sat with me. He just kept me company while Dad was going through what he was going through. And I babbled for a long time, and he let me talk. And when I finally stopped, he paused dramatically, and what he said was profound. He said, "You have a plan. Plans are good. It's good to have a plan. What are you going to do if Grandfather's plan is different from your plan?" Grandfather is the Native American name for the Creator. So this was an incredibly humbling moment, but also a powerful lesson. And it's pretty much the only thing I can tell you about goals. Go in the direction that you're being guided, but be open to growing into something that you can't even envision at this point, that you don't even know about. And any time you ask for a change in your life, expect challenges and emotional upheaval. That's just how it is. You can't clear out the old stuff and build something new without kicking up some dust. There's going to be some demolition, and there's going to be some hard work. So set your resolutions. Go in the direction that you are being attracted to, but remember, your plan may not be Grandfather's plan. Happy 2014, and many blessings in this new year. And now let's listen to part two of me being interviewed last September by Dave Schrader of Darkness Radio. Again, many thanks to Dave for letting me rebroadcast the interview on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Darkness Radio is on the air, dispatching possessions, curses, and negative energy. We're talking with David Franklin Farkas from househealing.com. Househealing.com, remote healing for real estate, people, and business. David, we tickled it a little bit in the end of last hour, and I want to get back into the idea of curses. And this is something that's been intriguing to many of my guests over the last few weeks. And just curious, working in energy, does a curse exist in your world? And if so, does it take the form of energy, and can it be dispelled by you, or does it have to be dispelled by the person who placed the curse there?
Well, there are several questions in there, obviously.
Yes.
Curses and spells are related, and in many ways, they're just codependent behavior on steroids. Let me explain. If somebody does something to another person and they get angry about it and they have an emotional outburst and say, I want something bad, usually they'll say something specific, to happen to this person because of what they just did. That's a curse. Now, most people are not trained and practiced in how to, you know, in effect, weaponize that thought and that emotion, but that's what a curse is. It's saying you want something specific and bad to happen to a person because of something. A spell is more benign. A spell is saying, I want this circumstance or this person to change in this specific way. And again, people can learn how to do that extremely effectively, and if you practice it and you're trained and you have a good teacher, the spell or the curse that you do will be more powerful than the average, you know, teenage girl doing the same thing, which they do all day. So curses and spells are a part of normal life and codependent behavior. But there is a powerful version that is done by people who are practitioners. And the most dangerous work that I can do is working on something that was intentionally set by a powerful practitioner. And I've had people in South America ask me to work on a property for them or do something else. And it's like hitting a live wire. As soon as I look at it, I go, oh, I should not be dealing with this person. And as soon as I do it, they know I'm doing it because they set up ways to be aware of it and booby traps. So is this stuff real, and can this stuff be very dangerous? Yes. Is most of it as dangerous as people think it is? No. No, it's going on all the time. But, you know, if somebody in your family lineage was trained because of whatever their circumstances were, and somebody, you know, essentially put a psychic hit on them, yeah, it can have long-lasting effects.
So in your world, it does exist. It can happen.
It can happen, yes.
It's so astounding to me that this goes on. And I mean, are there things that we can do energetically that you understand as a shaman to, you know, bounce energy like that off so that we can't have those things attached to us? Because people are cursing us each every day. You know, I mean, that's just the way people are. It's a hateful world we live in, unfortunately.
That statement all by itself is self-fulfilling. Because what we attract into our lives is both our beliefs, but also a reflection of what's going on for us that is being outpictured into our experiences. So as you become quieter, as you become more loving, as you let go of all the things you're attached to and all the things that you're angry at, you don't attract into your life the kinds of circumstances where all of that is happening. Life becomes much kinder, simpler, more loving as you become more loving. So when you say something equivocally that the world's like that and people are mean and terrible, it is your experience, but it can be changed because it all starts from the inside. Setting that aside, since most people have that experience, can you protect yourselves? And is it necessary? Yes. It can be done. There are ways to do it. I'm not teaching a psychic protection class at the moment, but I know people that do. And there are several basic elements to it, the most important of which is grounding, being energetically connected to the earth instead of floating out of your body and being, you know, la, 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 instead of being grounded, which is the basic skill in all martial arts, for example, is all about grounding, which is why, you know, nobody attacks a martial arts master. It's not because of what they know. It's about the fact that they're grounded and they appear to be different from other people. You just wouldn't do it. You wouldn't think of doing it.
Right.
It wouldn't be smart. One of the things that I see all the time when I'm working on people is that the traumas of their childhood and the number of people in our culture who have been abused in various ways, physically, emotionally, sexually, every conceivable way you can imagine, is enormous. I see it all the time. And it does damage to the energetic anatomy. It closes down the way that you're grounded so that it's very difficult, especially under stress, to stay in your body. It puts holes in the aura, which is your spiritual immune system, and that leaves you open to all kinds of entity attachments, ghosts, demons, all kinds of stuff. And I look at that pattern all the time, and when I see that pattern, I just ask the client, is this part of your personal history? I'm sorry I have to ask, but you know, when I see this pattern, I have to ask so I know what I'm dealing with. I'm right 90% of the time just by looking at the chakras and the entities that are attached to someone.
So you can tell by looking at them and kind of feeling the energy around them, what kind of entity, what kind of, if you're dealing with a curse, if you're dealing with somebody that's had a spell or...
My process at this point is that I do a lot of the work on paper. I've come up with a system where I can very quickly ask a series of questions in my head, and I get numbers. So I've created a very geeky system, which in the dowsing world would be called paper dowsing, and it allows me, in effect, to do a download. and say, okay, I can see what's going on with these chakras. I know what the energy pattern looks like. If it's a property, I can map out the vortexes and the ley lines. I can see how many of different kinds of entities are there. So I get a quantitative look at it. When I'm on the phone with somebody, I typically don't go into enough of a trance state to do very clear psychic work, but I can get a whole lot of data so I can have the conversation. And one of the things nice about that is when I look at it again, I can see how those numbers are changing. You know, it gives me benchmarks to see what's changed.
You know, this is going to seem kind of a weird snowball question for you here, but talking about these energies and these ghosts, Kira brings up an interesting point on Twitter, and she asks, why do ghosts tend to float close to the ceiling? Why is it that we always see them hovering in corners and up against the ceilings of the rooms? That it just seems weird. How is that energy creating that to happen? Do you know?
You know, my immediate response is that's true of certain kinds of ghosts in certain circumstances.
Okay.
You know, it's like shadow people. There's the ongoing conversation about shadow people. My take on shadow people is that's the best that ghost has learned how to do in manifesting itself in a way to interact with people. They just don't have the energy to turn into an apparition. And they wind up being this dark thing that moves around that you can still sort of see, but they just haven't worked out that skill. Or they don't understand what's going on at all. I don't think it has anything to do with, I don't think the shadow dark aspect of it really has anything malevolent. I think it's just the best they can do. And I think that's true for most ghost phenomena. They're doing what they're doing in circumstances where things are not working the way they expect them to work. They're trying to figure out if they can see us at all, how they can interact with us. And they'll have a sense of who has sensitivity. So they'll go to, you know, the crazy people in the hospital, in psych hospitals is one of them. But little kids are all broadband. They can see ghosts and other entities. And people who have some kind of psychic ability or sensitivity. So, you know, I always get questions from people that are just learning to do psychic stuff. Why are they all coming to me? It's like, well, you ask to be able to see them, and when you can see them, they can see you. So there's an interaction. But, you know, there's no good single explanation for anything that ghosts do, because every one of the ghosts is having a different experience, and every ghost is a human being who had a different life experience. They still are who they are. They're just in this weird situation trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Well, we've got a caller. We've got Jeremy from Vermont on the line with us. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Hey, David, I have a question for you. When you have physically had to go in and do a cleansing, I was wondering, we always hear from different people, Wayne Warren, different people like that, who have said that when they've done a clearing of a not necessarily such a nice entity or a feeling, is there some sign after you've done it, like knocking, more light, a rose smell in the air after?
You mean a confirmation that they crossed over?
Well, yeah, confirmation basically that they've left the presence. And usually the stench is gone, and I guess there's a rose smell, or sometimes immediately you see more light in the room.
Typically, it will feel lighter, and whatever emotions you were feeling in your body will lift. You know, there's that sense of dread or what's going, you know, not knowing what's going on. And typically that will shift. Part of it for, you know, there are different ways to do that work. And if what someone is doing is getting the ghost to leave, that won't necessarily create a situation in which there are no ghosts in the space or a situation where the ghost won't come back. The only way that will happen is if the ghost crosses over. And those are two different approaches. You can, you know, you can chase somebody out of your pantry. It doesn't mean they won't be looking in your window. So if you help the ghost cross over, there's definitely a sense of there being a shift, and they don't come back.
That makes sense. That answers my question.
Thank you very much for listening and calling in tonight, Jeremy. We appreciate it. You talk about the way that you have to dispel these energies and get them out. Can you, you know, feng shui talks about energy, and sometimes things get stagnant. You should never fight in your room. You should never watch TV in your room. You should not do these things because the emotions and things build up, and it'll create this weird dampening effect and make things uncomfortable. Can you feel just by going through the house remotely, this has nothing to do with curses or ghosts or demons. What this has to do is with the dysfunctionality of this family. And all they've done is they've layered crap upon crap on themselves and in this house and in these rooms. And that's really all that needs to be done is this kind of spiritual slapping to get this energy moving again.
Well, it's more complex than that. Because typically the reason that that particular family or tenant is in that particular house is circumstances, dramas, and traumas that happened long before they even knew about the house. It could be a historic event that predates the house. It could be financial difficulties that happened during the construction of the house. It could be things that happened with the contractors. It can be the first owner's experiences there. It could be any number of things. I cleared one house where the issue was an argument between the original developer and his subcontractors over a particular house. And when, you know, perfect house, the market was still hot, it should have had a bidding war, and it just, they couldn't get a deal. And we happened to get the history of the house, and I knew that, but it definitely was the emotions that, and the drama that happened when the house was being built. It had nothing to do with the people that were living there. But, you know, there are places where over and over again, the people that own, that live in the place will have the same kinds of problems. And the reason that they're in that place having the same kind of problems is they're attracted to the energy of the place because it's just like them. So one of the things that I've only had landlords actually try a couple of times, but it does affect things, is taking a property that's attracting, you know, deadbeats and people with emotional problems or people with drug problems, violence, whatever it is, and clearing the entire building, all of the apartments for at least two rental cycles. You know, going for two lease cycles, not rental cycle, and see whether things will change. And I had two buildings side by side in Canada. One was filled with deadbeats, and the guy couldn't get his rents paid and all the rest of it. And the other one was all wealthy retirees that never left until they died. And they were the exact same building.
All right, our guest, David Franklin Farkas, househealing.com, remote healing for real estate people and business. We're going to take another quick break. We'll come back. And David, if they called in, and just by speaking to them over the phone, can you sense if there's something in their home?
I can do a quick check, but it takes a couple of minutes.
Well, maybe we'll open up and allow a couple callers for that. Stay tuned. We got more of the best in paranormal talk radio right after this.
You're listening to an interview with David Franklin Farkas being rebroadcast on the Farkas Files here on EmpowerRadio.com.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. Now, when you're facing, David, this energy that you work on in homes, have you ever gone in to clear a home and realize that one of the people in the home is actually possessed? And then do you have the ability to actually get that out of them?
Typically, I'm not going into homes, but I'm going to...
No, but I mean, but energetically, out. I mean, even just in working, yeah, when you're picking up on what's going on there.
Right. Typically, it would be because somebody is asking me to clear them. You may find this shocking, but everyone has seen somebody get possessed. And you just don't know that's what's happening. If you know somebody who is a drunk, where everyone says, you know, when he's drunk, he's like another person.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch them as they slowly become less and less attached to their body and unable to speak clearly and move, and then all of a sudden their personality changes, and they become the life of the party or whatever the change in personality is. That's a possession, especially if it happens in bars. Bars are full of ghosts that just want to be able to have a physical body that's drunk again. And it goes on all the time. If it's somebody who's a blackout drunk and they don't remember what happened and what they did, they were so far out of their body, there is no memory attached to them. And that's just going on all the time. So most of those are ghost possessions, but, you know, that kind of possession stuff is happening frequently.
See, that's weird. Now, you say that. Stan, I got to tell you a weird story from college, and then we have to take another break here, but... that was a really profound thing you just said. I remember I had had a bad night, grabbed a bottle of tequila, and I was drinking tequila at college and just kind of storming around. And things started to go strange when I got to the bar. Literally, I remember the last thing that I did, I had a box of Ritz Bits in my hand, and the bouncer said it's $5 cover charge, and I reached into the Ritz Bits box and gave him a handful of Ritz Bits. He laughed and let me in, and that's the last memory I have.
Right.
Until a little later, and I'm sitting at a table having a conversation with somebody, and it's like I woke up and I had no clue what we were talking about. And then it went black again. And then I came to and I was out on the dance floor, which there had to be somebody else running the ship because this guy doesn't dance. And I'm out on the dance floor and holding hands with this girl, and we're kind of chatting, and bam, I go out again. And, you know, it was just like these minute flashes throughout the night, but they're vivid, clear moments of like coming back into consciousness and then it being pulled away from me. And right. I've often thought, what the hell? Who is running the ship at that moment? I understand muscle memory and driving home from work and being tired, and you get home because you just know where to go, even though you're not paying attention. But in that case, I was doing stuff I don't normally do, and I was putting myself in positions and in situations I wouldn't have done otherwise. And it's easy to just blame the liquor and say, oh, it's liquid courage or whatever. But to have those moments of lucid clarity, I mean, I've drank to the point where I've been drunk before, but not had that kind of impact.
Yeah, alcohol in particular is one of the ways that people become possessed, and they're usually not full possessions. It sounds like yours was full possession for the time. And, but it's an influence. The ghost has got enough control over what's going on that they get you to do things that you normally wouldn't do, and they're enjoying being in your body and doing that, but they don't completely take over control of your body. And then there are circumstances where they do take over control of your body and you're just not there. So that kind of ghost possession is more common than most people realize. Demonic possession is fairly rare. The religious perspective for a lot of Christianity is that any possession is demonic, and that's not accurate. I've actually done an exorcism with one of my teachers where I was in the room and it was a demonic possession, and I'm very upfront and close and personal with that. I understand what that is. And yes, people can be demonically possessed, and some of the time most of the time, I can have an influence over it remotely.
Wow. Very cool. David Franklin Farkas is our guest. You can check out his website, househealing.com. Remote healing for real estate, people, and business. I think you are my favorite name of any guest I ever have on. I just love the role of David Franklin Farkas. We'll be next on Darkness Radio. Stay tuned. We got more coming your way right after this.
This interview with David Franklin Farkas is being rebroadcast on The Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. We'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, one in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org. early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbe. Did you know that every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-NU, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
Hi everyone, I'm Katie Couric. You know, girls who grow up with confidence are more likely to reach their full potential. I've interviewed world leaders, CEOs, and celebrities, but my most important role has been as a mom to my two daughters, Ellie and Carrie. I've worked hard to encourage my girls to see the world as a place of endless possibilities. They know that believing in themselves will give them the confidence they need to persevere. Research has shown that girls with high self-esteem are better prepared to navigate life's challenges, not only in their teenage years, but well beyond. So join me as we empower the next generation. Together, we can help today's girls achieve their dreams tomorrow.
This message was brought to you by the Alliance for Women in Media and made possible through the support of Dove and the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to help girls reach their full potential. To learn more, go to Dove.com.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with more of this pre-recorded interview with David Franklin Farkas being rebroadcast on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Stay with us.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and tonight we're talking about possessed properties, haunted homes, and how can we heal these properties? How can this happen? Now, do you ever come across David Franklin Farkas, our guest for the evening? Househealing.com is his website. You've talked about demons, you've talked about spirits and things. Have you ever come across what people refer to as elementals, things that never walk the earth as human form or anything? Mellifluous kind of nasty creatures.
Well, demons have never walked the earth in bodies either, neither have angels. So they're also beings that have never been human, very different from ghosts. And most elementals are beneficial, not dangerous. Elementals are the spirits of nature. They're the consciousness of nature. So, you know, for people that actually talk to trees and get answers, that conversation is happening with the intelligence of the tree, and that has a personality. There are cultures all over the world that base a lot of their spirituality on that communication with nature, whether it's as individual entities that are elementals or with other things. So, you know, you can look at it as most of the stuff in fairy tales, all those beings in fairy tales, in one way or another are real and sort of look like what the illustrations look like. And so I run into certain, I have friends that work in that realm, and, you know, they see them all the time. And I only see certain ones that I need to help because they're stuck in a building and that's causing them a problem, but it's also causing a problem in the building. So I was talking about the big old mill buildings, the factories that were water powered here in Massachusetts, and they've got these huge stone foundations and waterworks and big wooden gears and all kinds of other stuff. And trolls get confused and stuck in them. And trolls are guardians of earth and stone, and they come to carry out a responsibility, and they might have been assigned there hundreds of years ago, and they're moving a geological time. They don't appear to be smart because everything's happening slowly for them. And they'll get stuck somewhere, but they will not leave because they're taking their care of their responsibility. And that can freak somebody out if they run across the energy of a troll who's confused and trying to figure out why life is changing around them.
Man, I run into those kind of trolls on Facebook all the time.
Yeah, you know, it kind of offends me that the word troll is used for that. Trolls are actually these guardians that take a whole lot of responsibility in the natural world. But, you know, so trolls I have a relationship with, and I can have an easy conversation with them. Dragons are another one. Someone told me about their relationship with dragons, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. So I started attempting to make contact with that realm. So I've got a relationship with that kind of elemental, with the dragons. But there are little people that are different in each area. Everybody knows about leprechauns. Everybody knows about gnomes and that kind of stuff. But every culture all over the planet has some version of the little people, often several races of little people, that there are stories about, but frequently especially people who live in the country and are more connected to nature will see them and have ongoing relationships and conversations and have to negotiate with them and all kinds of things. So that realm, while in, you know, the United States and Western culture, especially in an urban environment, people tend to think that's all bunk and they never run across it, but that stuff's real.
Really?
Yeah, and, you know, in the same way that there are human beings who are obnoxious, angry, mean, and all the rest of it, there are elementals that are obnoxious, mean, and angry. So it's the personality, not necessarily the kind of entity it is.
And if you have questions for our guest and you'd like to talk to David Franklin Farkas and you've got something you think in your home, he can do his best to try to tune in briefly and let you know if there definitely is something there. He may not be able to get into it as deeply to let you know what and what you're dealing with, but he is there. Would you be willing, and I know we spoke about this briefly about, you know, the first time we had you on the show, would you be willing to, if I selected maybe 2-3 people from our audience base that had something negative going on in their house, would you be willing to do a clearing for them? And then we could have them come back on the show with you and discuss how these changes have taken place and what went on.
You know, I got ambushed into doing that on someone else's show. So I appreciate you're not doing that to me. But the issue with that is the range of possible outcomes is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
And the range of sensitivity of the homeowner to whatever the changes are is pretty broad. So this isn't something that you can do a direct test with. Am I open to it? I guess so, but
we weren't really looking at testing you to see if it works. It was more along the lines of just, you know, hearing from people that have actually had the experience and you know, people that are seeking help right now and don't know where to turn. You know, it's always a nice little boost for business when they can actually hear it happen on one show and then a follow-up comes up and here you are and these people have been dealing with it. I, you know, just like I said, just throwing it out there. If it's something you want to consider, we can always look at bringing you back to do that again here in the future with us as well.
Talk about it after the show.
Sure.
Well, obviously not tonight, but let's talk about it and figure out how to do that.
We're going to take our final break with David Franklin Farkas. You can check out his website at househealing.com. Stay tuned. More right after this. Good evening and welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio 5 nights a week. Right now, though, househealing.com, remote healing for real estate people and business. This is David Franklin Farkas. He's our guest and has been with us for the last hour and 45 minutes plus change. Interesting question here, and I already know the answer, but I love to hear how different people approach this. John from Alabama says, Dave, let me play devil's advocate here for one question. If David is doing this to help people, why does he have to charge? And I'd be interested in hearing his answer. Thank you. And that, again, is from John in Alabama.
Well, you could say the same thing about doctors or lawyers or anyone else that does things that help people. If I don't charge for this, then I have to have a full-time job doing something else to make ends meet. And that means that I can't do this for very much of my life. And this is my work. So like anybody else that's providing a service for somebody, I'm a service provider, I get paid.
Yeah, and I always believe that. It's like people say, but this is a gift. You've been given this gift of healing and this gift. And I say, well, you know, Britney Spears was given the gift of singing, Michael Jackson the gift of singing and dancing, and it didn't stop them from making bajillions
Here's
of dollars.
The metaphor that I used.
Right.
If I was in an indigenous culture and I was raised in that village and they knew that I had skills and I got trained by the elders, and then I took on the responsibility for the village of being the one that does this work to help the village, I would not be expected to do all the other things that villagers do. I would not be hunting. I would not necessarily be one of the warriors. And people would provide me with shelter and food, because I would be the medicine man, the shaman, the whatever it was called in that culture, and they need me to do this, so they take care of all the other stuff and make sure it's okay. So it's really hard right now, with working with a clientele all over the world, to have somebody roast a chicken for me and bring it to my house. So I use PayPal.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'd take fried chicken. Popeyes, you can deliver right up to our station here. Stan and I'd be happy to eat it while we share this wealth of info.
Of being taken care of to allow you to do the work, and this is very specialized work, and there are not many people that can do it.
You said doing this kind of work drains you. It can really take it out of you.
Yes, there are definitely weeks where there's only one day that I can actually be focused and work safely. You know, at its worst, if I get attacked by demons and overwhelmed by them, I could wind up in a psych hospital or dead. And I know that.
Does that ever frighten you? I mean, the idea of doing that? Or do you just not let that water in so it doesn't sink your ship? I mean, you just push it out and focus and don't allow that intention or expectation to happen.
Yeah, I've been attacked enough times that I know how to deal with it. I have a tremendous amount of protection, you know. But if you're asking, is this a tough job? Yeah. You know, people, I work with a group of archangels, and people, you know, laugh about that and all the rest. And I said, no, you don't understand. They're archangels in full SWAT gear wearing hazmat suits. This is not some lighthearted, new age, airy-fairy, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. This is doing the heavy lifting of stuff that other people don't deal with. You know, not that all of it's like that. A lot of it is pretty straightforward. I do this all the time. But the stuff that's dangerous is very dangerous.
We've got a caller coming in here from Minneapolis. Dustin, welcome to the show. What's your question for David Farkas?
My question is, I live in a house in the Twin Cities here. Previous owner, who was the original owner of the house, I don't know what the land or the property was used for before, committed suicide in the house after a battle with cancer. My wife seems to think that the house is haunted, presumably by his or her spirit. What are your opinions on this? What's the likelihood of this? Any thoughts?
Well, normally I'd ask for the address, but we don't want to give that over the air. Let me see if I can tune into it and see what's happening. Well, the energy is pretty agitated, which is a sign something's going on. Just give me a minute. Hate giving you dead air, Dave.
No, it's understandable. You've got to focus in, and I don't want to take away from that while you're working.
Yeah, it's tricky doing this without more information, but there is some ghost activity there, some of it from recent times, some of it from historic times. I can't tell you how far back. And there are some signs that there was violence. So is there stuff going on there, and could your wife be sensitive to it? Yeah, that's definitely possible.
Okay.
When the suicide takes place, yeah, when suicide happens, David, does that leave a deeper scar in the area because of, you know, kind of the double-edged sword of the death that took place there and the fact that this person took their own life?
Well, the issue is more
what was going on for the person who took their own life. So if they feel guilty and like it was a mortal sin, then they're less likely to cross over and it's more likely to be traumatic energy. If the person was dying of cancer and saw it as a release from their suffering and something that they were choosing to do knowing that they were going to cross over and that this was a relief to them, in all likelihood, it's a very different scenario, and they may have crossed over. They may have had a good sense of what happens when you die. They may have had good counseling and good people with them. So you can't really say just because it's a suicide, especially a suicide that was not a violent suicide, that it would be, you know, in quotation marks, better or worse, or what the circumstances of the ghost would be. You know, that if somebody is conscious of what they're doing when they're dying and they are aware that they are going to cross over and what to look for, so they've been told all of that, then in all likelihood they just left their body and they left space-time. If someone, you know, takes their life violently because they're despondent, that's a whole different set of circumstances.
And you had one other follow-up question, Dustin?
Well, yeah, that actually added another one. It sounded to me like, from what I heard from the neighbors, it was a relatively violent thing. The first shot wasn't terribly effective, so it took another shot to do it.
It wasn't violent, though. You know, when it's a suicide and the person is despondent, they violently take their life, they frequently do wind up stuck there. But there's also some historic ghosts there and other things that probably predate the building. So depending on the sensitivity, you know, what your wife is sensitive to and how she's picking up on it, she may be picking up on that guy, but she may be picking up on some other ghost activity completely.
All right, Dustin, thanks for calling in and being part of the show. Cassie, we got to go quick here because we're almost out of time. What's your question for David Franklin Farkas?
Hi, I'm living in the house that my mom died in her sleep in. When she died in the house in her sleep, and I'm wondering if you can tell if she's still here or not.
Do you have any reason to believe that she's still there? Is
yeah, there different that things will go missing, like... car keys. There have been a couple of times where I couldn't get through the door, like it was being held shut.
So you think your mom would be the one doing these tricks?
You've got some typical ghost phenomena. You know, when you asked the question, my immediate sense was that she is still there, and that's not that uncommon. One of the main reasons that people that are aware that they died stay is that they want to take care of their relatives, and they don't realize that they can do that after they cross over. My immediate off-the-cuff response would be, it feels like your mom is there, but I'd have to take a closer look.
Well, thank you, Cassie, for calling in. You can reach out to David at his website at househealing.com for more information. And we want to thank you, David, again for joining us, and we'll look forward to bringing you back here a lot sooner, okay?
So much.
They can find your show Thursday nights, and where can they find that?
At thefarkasfiles.com.
Thank you, Mr. Fark. This is Darkness Radio.
This has been a pre-recorded interview rebroadcast on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. Wherever you are, at whatever time of day, whenever it is in your week that you can fit us in, I know people all over the world listen, and they listen from thefarkasfiles.com, from empowerradio.com, and from iTunes podcasts and the other streams where you can find our show. Thank you so much. It's an honor to do this show, and a total pleasure knowing that I'm a part of your lives. If in listening to all this you have become curious about my work, you can find the details about it at househealing.com, househealing.com. On the contact page is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a link to my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on with you, whether it's a property or a person or a situation, whatever it may be, to see how my work might be helpful for you. Please take advantage of that. Would love to talk to you and see how I might be helpful. And as we go off into this new year, again, I just want to remind you of that disclaimer when you ask for things in your life, which sounds something like this or something better manifests in the perfect way for all concerned, not just for you, but for everybody, for everybody that's affected. And, you know, there's a Buddhist compassion meditation that I plug into periodically. And basically what it says is, may all beings be safe, may all beings be happy. And isn't that what we all really want on the planet right now? Things are changing quickly. All kinds of new and exciting things are going on. The old powers that were are losing their grip, which is a wonderful expression because some of them are really losing their grip. And new things are showing up all over the place. But under it all, isn't what we all want for everyone to be safe and for everyone to be happy and blessed? And so with that thought, let's go off into this new year, 2014, and enjoy each other's company. As Ram Dass put it so perfectly, we're all just walking each other home. Let's enjoy walking each other home. Thank you so much. I look forward to being with you next week. Have a wonderful week. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful night.